Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In this edition of Radio Curious, we're going to talk about a new rule established by the Bush administration on August 10th, a series of measures that end up in what are called the no-match rule. In layman's language, that means that if a person is employed and the employer sends in the employment payment records with a Social Security number that doesn't match the name of the Social Security number according to the SSA, the Social Security Administration, the SSA will send a no-match letter to the employer and say, fix it. To discuss this problem and the possible effects it has in California, we're visiting with attorney Carl Borden, an associate counsel for the California Farm Bureau Federation, talking with him from his offices in Sacramento, California. Carl Borden, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you very much, Barry.
So the no-match rule, what does that mean in reality for a California employer?
Well, what it means, Barry, is that the Department of Homeland Security is telling employers that starting when the rule takes effect on September 14, that if they get one of these no-match letters from Social Security Administration that you referred to, and they ignore it or don't take reasonable steps to try to resolve the discrepancy, that the immigration authorities, now called the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, can use the employer's receipt and failure to take reasonable steps as something called constructive knowledge, that the employer knew that persons named in that letter are, in fact, not authorized to work in the United States.
And then that comes back as an economic hit in the form of a fine to the employer.
Yes, that's right.
So what are reasonable steps?
Well, what this new rule does is it says what one package of reasonable steps is, and I can walk you through those if you'd like.
Sure. I think it's important to understand because the discussions seem to lead us to believe, or want us perhaps to believe, that this could have a tremendous economic impact in California.
Well, it certainly could if it's enforced vigorously. This rule does not per se, it doesn't technically require an employer to follow these steps upon receiving the no-match letter. It's phrased more from the standpoint of we're from the government and we're here to help you, that if you follow these steps, and I've categorized them myself as being five steps, that, as I mentioned before, the government will not use your receipt of the no-match letter as constructive knowledge that you're really employing an illegal alien. If the government ultimately targets the employer and finds out that a person mentioned in the no-match letter is in fact not work authorized. So the term actually used by the government here is a safe harbor, that by following these steps, the government will not use the employer's receipt of the no-match letter as constructive knowledge.
And constructive knowledge means that the person knew or should have known based on the circumstances of which they were aware.
Yes, essentially that's right. Not that they knew, but that really goes more towards actual knowledge. But it's the second part where you're saying that they should have known that where a person gets some hint of some suspicious activity of illegality, that their failure to act on that information to try to clear things up can give what the law calls constructive knowledge. So the individual gets punished for sticking his head in the sand.
So in this case, the reasonable steps are?
Step one, the employer needs to check its records. After getting the no-match letter, the employer has 30 days to check its own records to see if the mismatch was due to a record-keeping error by the employer. And there's kind of a logic tree on each one of these steps, that if it turns out one way, then one result, and if it turns out the inquiry is the other way, something else happens then. So in the event that the employer checks its records and determines, lo and behold, that it the employer did not properly report the number to Social Security Administration, that is the number in its records, then the employer has to correct the error, inform Social Security Administration of the corrected information, and there's a particular form, I forget the number, but it's a form SS4 or something. Don't quote me on that. There's a particular form the employer sends in to make the correction, and then the employer verifies with the Social Security Administration that the corrected name and Social Security number match the Social Security Administration's records. And the employer, it's required by the Safe Harbor, but also for its own protection, needs to document the verification and then store the documentation with the employee's Form I-9 that he went through those corrective steps. And if the employer is able to do all of those things, and then the employer is done. So step one would correct the problem.
Well, we know, as is the case, though it's not often spoken of, that illegal aliens often either make up a Social Security number or buy a Social Security card imprinted with a number that is either made up or taken from some other source.
Yes, that is common knowledge. And that type of a situation gets dealt with further down in one of the later steps. So step two, then, the employer has to go there in the event the employer determines the mismatch was not due to its record-keeping error. So step two requires that the employer ask the employee for confirmation of the Social Security number and employee's name that the employer has in its records. So the employer is to promptly ask the employee to confirm that the name and Social Security number in the employer's records are correct. And then if the employee says no, they are incorrect, then the employer has to do those things that I already went over in step one, the correction of the error, informing SSA of the correct information and verifying the information with SSA.
Well, let's stay with step two here for a minute.
Okay.
And suppose that someone says, yeah, someone gave me this number. I don't know the background.
Oh, well, in a situation like that, the employee, I would say he becomes his own worst enemy by giving the employer even more specific information about the fraudulent nature of the Social Security number. And, you know, even though it's not in and of itself evidence, proof of the employee's lack of work authorization, it would even set the employer on a higher level of alert that it may now have constructive knowledge of a problem with the employee's work authorization. And so the employer would have to take either these steps or some other steps, perhaps resulting in the firing of the employee ultimately, and let's say the employer asks the employee some further questions and says, well, you know, I'm really not authorized to work in the United States. At that point, an admission like that would require, in my opinion, the employer to fire the employee because it is against the Federal Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, put provisions in our Immigration and Nationality Act for an employer to continue to employ somebody knowing that that person is not lawfully here.
Wouldn't you say that that's often the case in many employment situations and it's just overlooked or a blind eye is taken to it?
I don't really think that is the situation. When you say a blind eye, I mean, there's different interpretations of that.
Well, it's overlooked and not recognized.
Well, in the situations that I'm most familiar of in agricultural employment, a situation like that is not likely. In other words, my understanding is employers of agricultural employees will go through the steps that they are required under federal law when first hiring employees to determine whether the person is authorized to work in the United States. That's called the Form I-9 Employment Eligibility Verification Process. And what the law says is that the employer needs to look at a document or pair of documents that prove the employee's identity and work authorization. And if the documents appear on their face to be valid and relate to the employee or to the newly hired employee, the employer is supposed to accept them as proof of the same identity and work authorization and record the information on a form, and that's the end of it.
And this is to step in where there may be a fraudulent number provided by the employee.
That's the situation there. So as the new federal Department of Homeland Security rule acknowledges, the receipt of the no-match letter may very well be the first time an employer has any inkling whatsoever that there might be a problem with the employee's documentation of work eligibility.
If step two, where the records that the employer asks the employee to confirm can't be confirmed, what happens then?
Just to clarify, this is the situation where the employee says, no, you recorded, Mr. Employer, in your records, the wrong information. It's not the information. It's not my name as shown on my Social Security card, or it's not the number that that is on my Social Security card. Here is my Social Security card again. Please record the correct number. And so in that case, the employer is to do that and then contact Social Security Administration to confirm the validity of that number. Now, if it turns out that the employee says, that this is the same information, Mr. Employer, you did record the information that I showed you correctly, then the employer has to go to step three.
Step three?
There's actually going to be two steps three and step four, that the employer has to do. Step three, the employer then asks the employee to resolve the issue with Social Security Administration. The employer has to promptly ask the employee to do that, and in so doing, the employer has to advise the employee of the date on which the employer got the no-match letter from Social Security Administration and has to tell the employee, please resolve this mismatch within 90 days of that receipt date. And you'll see why in a moment, that if the employee fails to do that, then they end up going to step five, which can have dire consequences for the employee. But right after step three, the employer, within that 90-day period, then has to try to verify with Social Security Administration that the employee's name and Social Security number match Social Security Administration records. And there's ways for the employer to do that by telephone contact or by going online to a Social Security Administration website. So that's step three and step four. The employer asks the employee to resolve the issue with SSA, and the employer tries to verify that same information then with Social Security Administration. Now, if those two steps fail within 90 days of the employer's receipt of the no-match letter, then the employer has to go to step five, and this is the last step. And the employer and the employee have to complete a new form I-9 employment eligibility verification form for the employee as though the person were a new employee, with a couple of exceptions, one of which is that to establish employment authorization, identity, or both, the employer may not accept a document that's referenced in a separate notice from Department of Homeland Security calling into question the legitimacy of a prior work authorization document shown by the employee. Two, the employer cannot accept a document containing a disputed Social Security number or alien number that's referenced in the no-match letter or a Department of Homeland Security notice. And so this would be the no-match letter we're talking about. Or three, the employer can't accept a receipt for application for a replacement of any such document. In addition, the employer, to establish the employee's identity or both identity and employment authorization, must see a document presented by the employee that contains the employee's photograph. And then the employer is to keep the new Form I-9 with the employee's prior form or forms I-9.
And then wait and see what happens next.
Well, yes, to see. I mean, there's no requirement under the rule for the employer to go back to Social Security and verify any new Social Security number that the employee gives the employer. And we can get to what that means in a moment.
Well, let's do that. But first, I'd like to say that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Attorney Carl Borden, Associate Counsel for the California Farm Bureau Federation, from his office in Sacramento, California. And we're talking about a new order from the Department of Homeland Security that was issued on August 10th, requiring that employees and employers coordinate with the Social Security Administration to see that the name and the number of the employee's Social Security card, in fact, conform to what the Social Security Administration has, and the potential consequences of failure for those numbers to conform, both to the employee, the employer, and to the economic impact that it may have in California. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Carl Borden, there's one more part to step five that I'd like you to explain.
Yes, thank you, Barry. And that's in the event that the employer and employee cannot complete a new form I-9 for the employee because the employee cannot produce an acceptable work authorization and or identity document to the employer. And so here's what happens in that case. The employer has to choose between either firing the employee because the employer does not have a good basis to continue to believe that the person has work authorization, or if the employer decides to continue to keep the employee in employment, then the employer risks a finding by the Department of Homeland Security that the employer had constructive knowledge that the employee was an unauthorized alien and that by continuing to employ the person violated the law.
And if the Department of Homeland Security makes that determination, then there are fines for increasing levels for the offenses.
Yes, that is true, Barry. The maximum, there's a range of fines depending on whether it's a first, second, or third or later offense. For a first offense, the current maximum fine is $2,000 per employee. For a second offense, $5,000. And for a third or later offense, $10,000 per employee, plus which, if the government is able to prove that the employer engaged in a pattern and practice of knowingly hiring unauthorized individuals, then there is an additional $3,000 penalty per employee, plus 6 months of jail time would be possible. And the government also has indicated it has not come out with its new proposed rule yet, but as part of this package of proposals that was released by the Bush administration on August 10, they are proposing to increase those penalty amounts to adjust for inflation so that the first offense would go up to $2,500 per employee for a first offense, second offense up to somewhere between $6,000 and $7,000 maximum fine for a third and later offense between $12,000 and $14,000 per employee.
Well, at this stage, 10 days after these rules have been promulgated and before they take effect, do you think this is a serious effort or is it a political ploy?
It is very difficult for me to answer that question. I mean, I've read reports, going both ways and in the paper, and it could very well be both. I expect to see, at least at the outset of this, after the rule takes effect on September 14, some high-profile prosecutions, enforcement actions being announced by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Tied in with this, Barry, is that the Department of Homeland Security has said that Social Security Administration no-match letters for tax year 2006 have not been sent out so far this year. Why? It's because the government was wanting to hold off to see if Congress would pass some type of comprehensive immigration reform, but in the wake of Congress's failure to do that, Department of Homeland Security in cooperation with Social Security Administration, will be including with Social Security no match notices that are going to be sent out to the employers over the next 10 weeks or so, a letter from ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that will tell employers what their obligations are with respect to the no match letter, with respect to employee work authorization. So It will just be very interesting to see what's going to happen again on the, if this is a ploy. There's some speculation that the Bush administration, since it did want to have comprehensive immigration reform, passed this measure or had this regulation enacted in order to put some political pressure on Congress to act. And specifically from agriculture's standpoint, we've been pushing for the last several years of a measure that's known as Ag Jobs, and we've been doing this in hand-in-hand with the United Farm Workers Union, may come as a surprise, and also with some of the farm worker advocates organizations. Each entity is getting something that it primarily wanted, and it realized that to have any chance at all of passing through Congress and getting the 60 votes necessary for a cloture vote in the Senate, felt that it was necessary to join forces. And so a couple of the main provisions of this would be for persons currently unlawfully here in the country to earn adjustment of their status so that they could be legalized and continue to stay here. And then in addition, modifications to the existing agricultural temporary worker program that employers, especially in California, that rely on so many workers during, say, harvest season, hundreds of thousands of employees, that we need to have that streamlined.
Do you feel that this measure is an effective one, is a good one to have been implemented?
No, I do not think that at all. I think that this type of measure is kind of a backhanded way for the government regulatorily to do what Congress really should be the one dealing with the particular issue as part of comprehensive immigration reform.
What then do you see are some of the unintended consequences?
Some of the unintended consequences could very well be discrimination against employees, or where they are wrongfully or terminated because the government, for example, in its records, has made a mistake. And so where the employer is trying to go through these steps and get resolution of the discrepancy, and we're talking about tens or hundreds or millions of employees, actually, that this could affect. And it just takes a small number of them for the poor employer who goes through this process and ends up terminating an employee who is lawfully here in the country, and the employee loses his job and he ends up filing suit against the employer. The employer's defense obviously is going to be, well, I was just doing what the government said I needed to do, but it's still going to subject the employer to litigation. The other thing too is this law, this regulation is going to create a real dilemma for employers that rely heavily on non-U.S. labor. And we're not talking just about agriculture. We're talking about the lodging industry, restaurants, landscaping, construction to some extent. And it's going to put employers in the dilemma of either following the no-match rule for large numbers of its employees and risking that they're not going to be able to get verification of the persons or resolution of the discrepancy with Social Security Administration, and therefore having to terminate the employees, not being able to replace their workforces quickly, and then certainly in agriculture when we're talking about the harvesting of perishable crops, ruination for the employer. And if the employer keeps the people on the payroll, then the employer risks, of course, the government telling the employer, well, you had constructive knowledge that these people are not work authorized.
So in other words, what you're saying is that it's really too soon to tell, and this is something that could have a severe, catastrophic result on California agriculture at harvest time, whether it's this fall or next year.
That's certainly a valid way to put it, Barry, and it could cause many employers to seek to move their operations where they can out of the country, and it could also cause if we're not going to have locally produced U.S. produced agricultural commodities, that consumers may start seeing more commodities from countries such as China in their produce aisles, which you know, has their own problems attached to them.
Now, since this is a directive of the Bush administration through the Department of Homeland Security, the next president, whoever that person is, could withdraw this ruling and establish something else or urge Congress to pass a different kind of immigration reform.
I think those are correct statements, yes.
Well, Carl Borden, Associate Counsel for the California Farm Bureau Federation, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Yes. I happen to reread a book that I don't even know if it's in general circulation anymore. It's a fairly thin book, and it's called Overcoming the Fear of Death by David Cole Gordon. And I had found many years ago that it was a reassuring book that did just what the title indicates its purpose is. And rereading it was reassuring.
Well, Carl Borden, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious.
You're very welcome, and I was glad to be able to participate in your show.
Attorney Carl Borden is an associate counsel with the California Farm Bureau Federation in Sacramento, California. The book that he recommends is Overcoming the Fear of Death by David Cole Gordon. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. At Radio Curious, we appreciate hearing from you. Our email is curious@radiocurious.org. The snail mail is 700 West Smith Street in Ukiah, UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.